Very good Friday. Welcome to today's edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In addition to feature agricultural news reports, I'll bring you a look at national and regional agricultural news headlines, and I'll start with regional ag news right after this.
We're waking up to a new dawn in agriculture, a better way, where farmers stop working the soil and start working with it. At Huma, our carbon-rich, humate-based products improve soil health and fertility, deliver nutrients more efficiently, and reduce crop input costs. Welcome to Humic Solutions with a human touch. Visit huma.us to learn more.
New garlic is being shipped from Mexico right now while Spain, California, and China are in the middle stages of harvest. These regions are just beginning to enter the market, according to Jim Provost with I Love Produce. In addition to these four countries or regions, the company also works with Southern Hemisphere garlic from Peru and Argentina that will start their seasons later this year. He says they work with the entire cycle of garlic production around the world. When taking a closer look at Northern Hemisphere supplies, they have been challenged by climate issues. Spain had rain during their early harvest. This was catastrophic as it caused staining and mold on the garlic. China's garlic harvest was also impacted by rain, affecting the quality of the country's white garlic. As a result, China's white garlic is now in short supply. Weather has also been impacting California's garlic supplies as the state dealt with a very cold spring, which delayed harvest by about 2 to 3 weeks. Now the state is going through an extreme heat wave in the middle of their late variety garlic harvest. Garlic does not do well in extreme heat and sun. Additionally, it's hard on the workers who are trying to bring it into the fields. Altogether, it's a troublesome situation, with chaotic spring weather having an impact on garlic harvests around the world. Reduced availability has resulted in an increase in fresh garlic prices by 10 to 20%. Pricing on peeled garlic, on the other hand, has remained stable, with more off-grades available for processing. While climate is having an impact on production volumes, quality doesn't seem to be impacted much. Mexican garlic is beautiful, according to Provost. The early variety California garlic is outstanding, as it was harvested before the current heat wave, he says. And while Chinese purple garlic is smaller this year, the quality is also excellent, and Spain's Morado garlic is showing very good quality with just reduced yields for the upcoming season. Last year, logistics were a real challenge, but at least those problems did not carry on. All is quiet on the logistics fronts right now, he says. Railway strikes ended as labor issues have been resolved with new contracts. On the port side of things, the International Longshore and Warehouse Unions will be representing the USA and Canadian West Coast ports and have settled both their contract negotiations pending ratification by the union members. As a result, container traffic is normal throughout the US and Canada, and container backlogs have ended for now. Sun World, based in Bakersfield, officially launched the all-new Ruby Rush brand red seedless table grape. Sun World licensed growers are harvesting Ruby Rush grapes this month in the U.S., Italy, Spain, and Israel. The new varietal brand will be used to identify a range of similar red seedless grape varieties, the first of which is the Sugra 50, which offers Sun World growers around the world a sustainable red grape with natural color development, better yields, less input costs, and great post-harvest attributes, according to the company's table grape breeder, Paola Barbara. Barbara also noted that the initial variety sold under the Ruby Rush brand is a new generation red grape that is expected to be an ideal replacement for traditional early season red seedless grapes like Flame Seedless and other red varieties throughout the season. He says for consumers, it offers a refreshing tasting experience during the early season. He says it's also a full sensory experience. The grapes are beautiful. Their radiant red berries are bound to surprise you with their deep striking and vibrant red colors. Jennifer Sanchez, SunWorld's Vice President of Marketing, added that the new variety is versatile, ideal as an easy treat during the day or paired with your favorite cheeses on a party platter or even frozen as part of an indulgent dessert. To support the launch, SunWorld has developed a full suite of branded retail marketing materials splashed with vibrant red, white, and green coloring. The Almond Alliance has announced a significant development in child nutrition and domestic food assistance programs in the United States. The Department of Agriculture recently took a proactive step to bolster these initiatives by securing approximately 30,307,200 pounds of almonds worth $78 million through an award solicitation for Section 32. This allocation for the fiscal year 2023 is specifically designed to provide nutritious almonds to support child nutrition and related food assistance programs and a commitment to support support American-grown products. Earlier this year, the Almond Alliance wrote to the U.S. Department of Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack, urging the USDA to use the appropriate purchase authority for the inclusion of almonds in these crucial initiatives. In collaboration with congressional leaders, these efforts have played a vital role in this achievement. Almond deliveries are scheduled to take place between August 15th and December 31st, ensuring a timely and consistent supply of nutritious almonds to the targeted programs. The impact of this initiative extends beyond the distribution of almonds alone. It signifies a recognition of the crucial role that nutritious food plays in the well-being and development of children, emphasizing the USDA's commitment to ensuring access to quality food for all individuals, regardless of socioeconomic status. Tanimura in Antle, a Salinas Valley grower shipper of premium fresh produce, is pleased to announce the expansion of its sales department with the appointment of two new experienced senior account managers, Todd Rainey and Jimmy Garcia. With nearly 30 years of experience in the produce industry, Rainey brings a wealth of expertise to his new role. Previously, he held various positions at prominent companies such as Custom Produce, Cisco, River Ranch, and Taylor Farms. Rainey will join the company's food service sales team, leveraging his extensive background in food service operations to provide invaluable insights and enhance coverage for the company's food service customers. Garcia, who has spent 19 years as a district sales manager at Dole Fresh Vegetables, brings extensive experience to his new role. Prior to joining Dole, Garcia held positions at U.S. Food Service and Marcon. Joining Tanimura and Antle's open marketing sales team, he will leverage his deep industry knowledge to explore new business opportunities for the company's premium fresh produce, both within its existing customer base and beyond. Here's a California factoid for you. In 2022, California's sweet cherry growers utilized 107.4 billion pounds or 53.7 million tons of sweet cherries with a value of $240 million. California ranks second in the nation behind Washington in sweet cherry production.
Agroplante is the leading manufacturer in specialty products. Agroplante formulates products that rise to the challenge of today's growing conditions. Saline and sodic soils reduce crop yield and cause significant crop losses. Agroplante developed Cation EX5 Plus with growers in mind to manage soil salinity. With multiple years of research, Cation EX5 Plus has proven to be an excellent source of calcium and an effective soil salinity manager. Run it through drip irrigation without any issues. Simplify your application method with innovative and efficient formulations. Alleviate salinity stress with Cation EX5 Plus. Agroplante, imagination, innovation, science in action.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, or APHIS, Spotted Lanternfly Strategic Planning Working Group has released the Spotted Lanternfly 5-year strategy for fiscal years 2024 through 2028. The working group developed a unified approach to reduce the spotted lanternfly's spread and impacts through the effective use of available state and federal resources. This pest is one that is up and coming and hasn't fully spread toward the West, but if it were to do so, growers of multiple specialty perennial crops in California would be affected.
Spotted lanternfly is an invasive from Asia, and it feeds on a wide range of fruit, ornamental, and woody trees. Now, it does prefer the invasive tree of heaven, but they also feed on a wide range of crops like apples, grapes, hops, walnuts, and hardwoods. And so far, we've just seen that vineyards appear to be the most adversely affected agricultural commodity, and mostly due to the fact that the spotted lanternfly acts as a big stressor to the vine. And hopefully, with future research, we'll help determine more of the impacts on vineyards and other types of agriculture, but that's what we know so far.
That was Matt Travis, National Policy Manager for the Spotted Lanternfly Program, who said USDA APHIS worked closely with the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture and the National Plant Board to address the pest through this 5-year strategy, with the idea that spotted lanternfly will continue to spread to more hosts across the country if action isn't taken now.
USDA APHIS has worked very closely with our state partners in developing this plan to really reduce the impacts of spotted lanternfly in agriculture and the environment. And the 5-year plan outlines 3 priority goals. The first goal is to effectively limit the advancement of spotted lanternfly and efficiently respond to its introduction within federal and state authority and our resource availability. The second goal is to support continued scientific research really focusing and angling towards practical management and risk mitigation using predictive modeling and tool development. Certainly biocontrol is part of that picture. And then the third goal is to establish a consistent national and state level outreach message, an educational campaign, really targeting the public, getting the public involved and engaged, and certainly industries at risk for spotted lanternfly dispersal. We're hoping the strategy will allow federal and state partners to really work to limit the spread of spotted lanternfly while advancing research on building new tools and pest management options for this test. We also are looking to harmonize that national response, both in the short term to limit the movement and allow state and federal partners to optimize limited federal funding and resources for the spotted lanternfly.
A multitude of states across the country will be involved in carrying out the five-year plan. So Travis said communication will be key.
That is very critical to getting our message out and to help educating our partners, our industries, on how to best prepare themselves for the day that they may find spotted lanternfly in their area or in their state. And so also providing them resources and opportunities to understand and know what the best science is, as well as what resource availability there is to help support whatever activities they decide to take on the ground. So that's key and crucial. And so we've already started that conversation with many of our partners, many of our state partners. We've delivered quite a lot of messages and had conversations about the plan, what it lays out, and how states play a vital role in this plan and how this plan can help best prepare them. Likewise, we're asking for others to be involved, of course, in the research and the research opportunities that are out there. There's a lot of knowledge gaps that we're looking to fill, a lot of things we need to learn about the spotted lanternfly. And we certainly realize that there are a lot of partners that we can engage, certainly from industry as well, because they have a lot to risk. And so we want them to be included as well when we look at what is the best research that helps us develop management tools and control methods. And so certainly talking to those industries, talking to those states, getting them ready and prepared, engaging them for the research effort, we feel is, you know, key to the plan and the plan success. We do have a group that will be reviewing the plan at the end of every year, and we'll be really looking at whether the plan is successful. And are we reaching the goals and objectives that we've laid out in this plan? And so this review board that we'll be assembling, that we're establishing, really is kind of holding up that measuring stick, if you will, to see, is this plan working? Is it working as we thought it would work, as we envisioned? And if not, what needs to change to make it more effective?
You're listening to My Ag Life. I'm Taylor Chalstrom.
The U.S. economy continues to defy gravity and remain strong despite lingering inflationary pressures, higher borrowing costs, and a barrage of other headwinds. However, looming risks to the economy are increasing in number and size. CoBank's Knowledge Exchange says a full impact of monetary policy actions, raising interest rates, quantitative easing, and contracting the money supply have yet to be felt. Those policy actions, combined with depleted consumer savings, tighter commercial bank lending standards, and a persistently inverted yield curve, are likely to result in a mild recession by the fourth quarter of 2023. Lawmakers recently introduced the Women in Agriculture Act. The legislation would establish a research priority for agriculture machinery and equipment designed to be used by women and create funding set aside for childcare facilities in rural areas. The bill also creates a woman farmers and ranchers liaison position at the Department of Agriculture. Although the number of women in the agriculture industry is growing, the majority of tools are designed and manufactured the height, strength, and body type of a man. Representative Shelley Pingree, a Democrat from Maine, led the introduction of the bill, and she says the Women in Agriculture Act provides resources specifically for women farmers and ranchers to level the playing field and work towards a fairer agriculture industry. In 2019, women accounted for 26% of the farm labor workforce, a 19% increase since 2009. However, farms operated by women earn 40% less income compared to male-dominated farms. USDA and partners within a spotted lanternfly working group have developed a five-year plan to control this invasive pest. USDA Ag News reporter Rod Bain.
Spotted lanternfly, an invasive pest that has been around for several years in many states. It's been a focus of concern in recent weeks in various northeastern states. To help combat this invasive species, USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service and partners formed a working group that recently released a five-year strategy.
We have built a solid plan that sits on three major goals, and we've committed to supporting these goals with certain levels of funding and resources that will be able to see this plan through for this next 5 years.
APHIS's Matt Travis says the three-pronged approach emphasizes response, research, and outreach in efforts to reduce the spread and impacts of spotted lanternfly. It is the latest step in efforts to control the pest, an invasive species especially threatening to grape crops and grapevines, as well as the invasive tree species, Tree of Heaven. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Russia declined to extend the one-year agreement that has allowed Ukrainian grain to move out of the Black Sea shipping ports, a move that immediately drove up commodity prices in response. Russia stated the shipping agreement was suspended. The announcement came following an attack on a key bridge in the Russian-occupied Crimea, the Kerch Strait Bridge that connects Crimea to Russia. Officials in Russia blame the attack on Ukraine. The bridge is considered a major artery for Russian supplies. The move is likely to drive up commodity prices for major exporters in response to the shutoff of Ukraine's major export corridor to the world. Russia will face serious diplomatic costs for pulling out of the grain deal, according to Jake Sullivan, National Security Advisor to President Joe Biden, in an interview with CBS. Officials in Russia maintain that the Black Sea deal was being terminated until Russia sees better terms for its own exports for grain commodities and fertilizer. Organic dairy producers have a few days left to apply for the Organic Dairy Marketing Assistance from the Department of Agriculture. The Organic Dairy Marketing Assistance Program assists certified organic dairy producers facing unique challenges in recent years, including higher costs attributed to the pandemic and drought conditions across the country. USDA's Farm Service Agency provides financial assistance for a producer's projected marketing costs in 2023 based on 2022 costs. The program provides a one-time cost share payment based on marketing costs on pounds of organic milk marketed in the 2022 calendar year. The financial assistance provides immediate support to certified organic dairy operations during 2023, keeping organic dairy operations sustainable until the markets return to more normal conditions. SDA will invest $104 million in financial assistance to certified organic dairy producers. Organic dairy producers should apply by July 26 at their local USDA service center. The Environmental Protection Agency has proposed a rule on tailpipe emissions that artificially tilts the scale in favor of electric vehicles, according to National Farmers Union's Ann Steckel, senior advisor. She says that the EPA missed an opportunity to capitalize on the benefits of biofuels with their proposed rule. Additionally, Steckel says the rule comes across as a mandate for electric vehicles rather than aiming to reduce greenhouse gas emissions.
If really the goal of what the EPA is doing is to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, we feel that they should look at many of the vehicles that are on the road today and that will likely continue to be produced, which are internal combustion engines. And the way to reduce greenhouse gas emissions through those internal combustion engines are to use more biofuels. So unfortunately, this rule was slanted way too heavily in favor of EVs and didn't take the opportunity to look at the benefits of biofuels.
While the comment period for the EPA's proposed tailpipe emissions rule ended on July 5th, Steckel says that additional outreach and advocacy efforts are being made before the EPA finalizes this proposed rule. She says the EPA failed to look at the entire life cycle of emissions for automobiles when proposing this rule.
And if you just look at the tailpipe, you know, the way they structured it, it unfairly incentivizes EVs. But if you look at all of the emissions, you know, you have to look upstream, the mining of the materials to make the batteries, the storage of the batteries after the disposal, kind of the entire life cycle of the automobile, you know, that would certainly fall in favor of biofuels. And EPA just missed that whole aspect of it. And so we're hopeful, you know, with further conversations that they will reevaluate what they have proposed.
Steckel says while the current administration has done some things in favor of renewable fuels and tells the National Farmers Union that they continue to support biofuels, this proposed rule undercuts that support. If the tailpipe emissions rule is finalized as proposed, NFU says the EPA expects electric vehicles to account for 67% of new light-duty vehicle sales and 46% of new medium-duty vehicle sales by the year 2032. The Environmental Protection Agency has denied 26 small refinery exemption petitions for the renewable fuel standard, spanning compliance years 2016 to 2018 and 2021 to 2023. The action demonstrates the agency's continued commitment to ending the backlog of pending SREs, according to EPA. Historically significant SRE approvals without clear and consistent metrics for evaluation created vast market uncertainty and undermined the intent of the RFS, creating a challenging environment for continued growth in a biomass-based diesel industry. EPA has worked in recent years to develop new parameters for petition approvals that have proven effective at strengthening the RFS. With a finalization of these 26 SRE petition denials, EPA has cut down SRE backlog significantly, with only two outstanding petitions remaining from compliance year 2018.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing Team, thank you for listening.